Don't spend another winter with your home colder than it should be. Hi, I'm Roy Spencer with PermaSeal. We measure the amount of heat loss and recommend solutions to keep it comfortable. Call PermaSeal for your free estimate, 800-421-SEAL, or visit permaseal.net.
Thank you very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is Wednesday. It was a snowy start. Not so bad now, but you're listening to 720 WGN. Terry Savage is along, as she is most Wednesdays. A little bit later today, we'll talk to Scott Kleinberg. And, you know, this is the time of year when they come out with baby lists, baby names, what's the popular and things like that. And believe it or not, Scott follows social media, Instagram and things like that. And the top baby names of the year are related. He'll sort that out a little bit later. But first, Janet Yellen is speaking to the Economic Club of Washington, and Terry Savage has been watching that to help us sort it out. Terry, welcome to the program.
I'm glad to be with you. It's hard to tear my eyes away from Janet Yellen, who has been for a good half hour or more now, been giving the world's best Econ 101 and 102 and 106 lessons. She has talked about every possible economic factor that could potentially go into a decision of the Fed to raise rates.
All right, let's go back to where you started, because Alan Greenspan was very difficult to follow, at least for me. Ben Bernanke maybe as well. Is she a more riveting speaker?
Opposite.
Is she?
It's 180 degrees. But the fact is, her audience, the Economic Club of Washington, and also the entire world watching the markets, already knows every single thing she said. I mean, she's talked about consumers. Yes, they're strong. That's good. Home value has gone up. Jobs are more secure. Consumer spending is therefore going up. That's helped the housing sector, even though it's not as great as it has been in the past. We have price stability. Gee, we have inflation below the Fed's 2% target. Actually, there's many ways to measure inflation. She detailed every one of them. Their personal consumption expenditures are only a quarter of 1%, but if you factor in this, that, and the other, inflation's running at 1.5% to 1.75%. She talked about what's going on around the world. China had its problems, but it's getting its act together. She expects stability in commodity prices. Europe seems to be doing better. So she has taken us on a very Econ 101 tour of all the factors around the world. I started making notes and they just kind of gave up. I was
going to say, let's take from that tour the headline that is in Market Watch right now. It says Yellen moves Fed to the brink of December rate hike. That's a fair headline.
She has given all the possible things that could happen. We know that she has said also meaningfully that there's still data to come out in the next week or two before the December meeting. That will be this Friday's unemployment report. But we've already had the ADP report today that showed some strength. You know, the bottom line is everybody's just saying to the Fed, for goodness sakes, get it over with. If you don't raise rates, we'll suspect that you're seeing some terribly horrible secret that leads you to think the U.S. economy is weak, so weak that you can't. So I guess six weeks ago, there was a thought that the Grinch wouldn't steal Christmas. There was such weak data out. How could they possibly raise rates? But now it looks like they're for sure going to do it. And what she talks about is not just the first rate and the timing of it, but what will the path of future rate increases be? Also not saying much about that.
Well that's too bad.
Because to answer questions as of this moment.
Well, I was going to ask you about that.
Those are always the unscripted part.
I was going to ask you about that because that is one of the big questions, isn't it, is how fast these rates then go. I mean, once they start, how quickly will they keep going? And she didn't give you much guidance there?
No guidance on that. This is the world's giant guessing game. So the bottom line is, I loved the way you started. All previous Fed chairmen have talked gobbledygook, and you couldn't come to a conclusion.
Right.
Janet Yellen is speaking the world's best, plainest English. And if I were teaching an Econ 101 class, I would take this tape of Janet Yellen's speech and say, this is going to be our course syllabus for the year. These are all the things the Fed chairman thinks about, and here's what we're going to study. But in the end, we came to the same spot. No conclusion. She, of course, has to make sure that her board agrees to vote on the rate increase, and it looks very much like they will, with the one interesting and possible exception of Chicago Fed Chairman Charles Evans.
Yeah, he spoke.
Who made the dissent.
I was going to say, he spoke yesterday and seemed to have much more of a go-slow attitude.
he always has. He is known as being very dovish. He's a terrific guy, wonderful economist, and he has been right along concerned. And do you know the reason for a big concern for the president of the Chicago Fed, which is the Midwest region, is that while all of the things that Janet Yellen said were positive, there is one huge negative, and that is a manufacturing, I don't want to call it a recession, but a huge slowdown because of the strength of the dollar. So that hurts manufacturing businesses, profits, and jobs. The Midwest sees a lot of that. I mean, we're not talking about Chicago per se, but Rockford and all around Indiana and so forth. This area is a manufacturing area still. It is hurt by the strong dollar. When you raise interest rates, the dollar becomes more attractive, i.e. stronger, making our exports, our manufacturing exports, more expensive. However, a big part of the economy is now consumers, consumer spending, services. So that's the new way the Fed looks at the world.
You talked
not about factories and output, but about jobs and services.
You talked about data, and we get the jobs report coming up later this week, and you mentioned the ADP report that came out today was much better than expected, right?
Yes.
It was, what, 217,000 jobs. They were expecting 190,000.
Right. That's automatic data processing. They process payrolls for major corporations. So they know. And there are many in the markets. And they tend to move very closely together. ADP always comes out just before the monthly employment statistics. And traders who know really rely on ADP. So what the bottom line is, doesn't matter what the numbers are right now. It matters that that's going to give credence to the Fed's idea that the economy is growing strongly enough. We should get back to, quote, normal.
I know you are the one who gives the tips on this program, not me, but I heard an interesting one this week. We need to invest in companies that make minivans because of the China relaxing the one-child rule. They think there actually is going to be a boon for minivans in China. How about that?
Well, I'm not sure which American companies will be making minivans in China, but I thought that was, I think that's a very, very clever comment.
I want to take a break.
It would probably take a long time. You know, you can put two children in the back of a car. You don't need a minivan until you get three or four or five.
Not in the United States, my friend. You need three seats for every person, just in case. There might be a carpool one day. We need more seats. Since we're in China, can you just give me a one-minute sort of primer on this idea of the Chinese currency being added to the IMF currency basket? Because that's a headline I see, but I'm not sure I understand it so well.
All right. So up at terrysavage.com, I just posted a column called China Joins the Major Money Leagues. There are four major currencies that form the International Monetary Fund's basket of reserve currencies. I'm not going to get too technical. Until now, they were the U.S. dollar, the euro, the yen, and the British pound. And yesterday, the IMF included the Chinese yuan, Y-U-A-N, also called the renminbi. And what it is an acknowledgement of China's growing power in trade and its growing liberalization, let me put that word in quotes, of its economic policies. They have been more liberal about letting their currency be freely traded. There was a time when you couldn't buy the Chinese currency. And so it's probably more like if you've got the name, maybe you'll play the game. But China's now one of the big five. It's a big prestige thing for them. You know, as Americans, we tend to believe that the dollar is the global currency in which most trade is purchased and sold in dollars. Energy prices, oil, always in dollars. We forget that at the beginning of the 19th century and the 20th century, the British pound was the currency of the world. Hail Britannia ruled the world, its navy, and the British Empire. The sun did set on the British Empire. The dollar has reigned supreme for the last 100 years or so almost. And now I think we're getting the first signal that the next big, important financial and trading economy, of course, is China. And this is the first step. We'll look back and remember this in the history books that our grandchildren read. They may read about how China got its first step into the world major money league.
That's Terry Savage. You can read much more from her at terrysavage.com. We're going to take a break, but when we come back, Terry, a couple of ideas for how to wrap up the year, and including, well, a couple I hadn't thought of when it comes to your property taxes, 401k, and things like that. It's 12:22. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. Snow showers are still around, Terry Savage, but we're told they will be leaving soon. I had a couple of inches on the ground when I left this morning. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say walking the dog was no fun.
So this is the time of year when people write columns about resolutions and how to wrap up the end of the year and taxes and all of that. And you have one at TerrySavage.com and at the Huffington Post, and which says some of the things that, you know, I think we would expect, like this is the time to make donations. But there's a couple of things that I'd never, ever considered before. And one has to do with the 401k. Now, you know, we had Peter Dubois from Morgan Stanley on earlier this week, and he talked about how you should be, you know, contributing to the 401k, do it as much as you can, as often as you can. But not all of us can contribute the full matching portion each year, the part that our employers would match. Now, you say you can go at the end of the year, if you've got some cash around, and try to recoup that money that you might have picked up from your company. Explain that for me.
Well, here's the thing. If I gave you a stock that would double overnight, if I said, okay, I've got a stock for you, well, you will double your money overnight. Everybody would grab a pencil. I got to write this down. I got to call it in and buy it. Well, when you get a free match dollar for dollar, even 50 cents on the dollar from your company for your 401k contribution, it's like leaving money walking on, you know, $20 bills on the sidewalk. You always want to get the free money. So my suggestion is, if you go into the HR department now, beginning of December, and of course it requires a company that's willing to bend a little bit, but if you increase your 401k contribution out of your last paycheck so that you get at least as much of the company match as you can, so you walk in there and say, look, you've been taking $212 out of my paycheck. On my paycheck this time, could you take $700 out? I could live without it in January. Yes, I know it's going to be tough with the credit card bills, but at least that way I'll get that matching contribution. And when you go into the HR department, if they won't do that, at least ask how much would I have to have taken out of my paycheck every paycheck next year to get up to the full match.
So you can set the pace for next year.
Yeah, pass up the free money.
I'm just thinking of all the personnel, the human resources people dealing with vacation and year end and all of that right now.
I know they're going to be annoyed, but but if they're matching you, if you can possibly make an extra one time contribution at year end out of your last paycheck, many companies will let you do that, and at least you'll then qualify for the match.
And it's something I had not ever thought of before, so I like that a lot. And then the other one is something else that sounds a little familiar, but I don't know that I've ever heard it either. Is to prepay, well, not prepay, but to pay your property tax for next year in advance. So the check that might be due in, what, April or May of next year, write it in December to get the tax write-off.
Sure. And most assessors send out the bills in December, and they let you go, oh, we'll pay half of it now and half of it later. If you've got some savings and you want the deduction this year because this has been a good income year, then you can write that check, make sure you get a receipt for it, keep a copy of your canceled check, or at least if you don't have a canceled check, but you'll see it on your online bill pay statement, and pay your property taxes in December. That way you can write it off on your 2015 tax return. Similarly, if you're paying quarterly estimated taxes, you might want to make your January estimated tax payment in December, because state income taxes are a deduction on your federal return. And the one other thing that everybody's probably thinking about right now is making charitable contributions, because this is a time when next April, when you and I have this conversation, you're going to be saying, what else can you do? What else can you do? And I'll say, remember last December, I said, sit down, make a list of all the worthy causes, write a check. I promise you that is exactly what I was doing this morning. Get those contributions in. Not only are they a tax deduction, but there's no holiday gift like giving. And I want to leave you with one quick thought. I bet we have 1 minute here. You know, I have been watching the video of Black Friday and the holiday shopping.
Yeah.
People just stuffing. I mean, I'm thinking, don't they have anything? They have to go running and stuffing all these bargains. Yes, they're bargains. The other videos that we've seen are the people in Eastern Europe, the refugees, who are freezing and have nothing but the clothes on their backs. There is something a little bit messy in this world if those are the two holiday images we have. So my suggestion is to now, for every new thing you're about to add, that wonderful sweater, the new pair of this, that new technology, get rid of some other things in the nicest way by donating them, to the Salvation Army, your church, your religious organization, and get your children involved. They're seeing all about buying this and getting that toy and that puzzle and that game and that sports equipment. I think this is the perfect time now, as you're putting up the Christmas tree, to go through the closets and say, let's see what we could give to some other children that could use this.
Terry Savage, you just described the circle of life. We go buy new stuff. We give old stuff to people who need it. We write it off on our taxes, and our kids get smarter. Thank you very much for that.
My pleasure.
We'll talk to you next week.
Absolutely.
That's Terry Savage. You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thank you, Kim Gordon. You're listening to The Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. Steve Bertrand here Wednesday afternoon. Scott Kleinberg from the Chicago Tribune joins us as well. He writes about social media for the paper, and he's going to explain why your Christmas tree has it in for your Netflix account.
That's a very good way of putting it.
So explain this for me, the idea that people are complaining about their Wi-Fi service since they put up their Christmas decorations.
Yes, apparently having Christmas lights up, especially the types that blink, can cause interference with Wi-Fi.
All the best ones blink, Scott.
Of course, of course. But the thing is, you know, there's nothing new about interference from things, you know, microwave ovens, wireless game controllers. Any of those things can cause interference. But people are putting up lights on their houses, and they're realizing at that point that weird things are happening, and there's this group that wants people to make the connection that it's possible that if you just put up your lights, and you have blinking lights especially, that it could be causing problems with your Wi-Fi.
So is there a fix?
The only fix, I would call it more of a
workaround. Is the epiphany when they take the...
Well, when you take your lights down in March, you know, there's that. But if you change the channel on your router, which is something that's really pretty easy to do if you know just enough,
right?
You can change the channel, and that usually helps.
I thought I knew just enough to change the drain in my bathroom sink this weekend, Scott. Plumber's coming over today. Okay, so let's go to Instagram because I teased this on Twitter. I hope you'll follow me on Twitter, at Steve Bertrand. You know, we come across with these baby names every year, the top baby names. And what is it? Sophia and Jackson are tops when it comes to the regular baby names.
Right, right.
But there now is a Snapchat baby name list.
Instagram, sorry. No, that's okay. Instagram baby name list, where the names of the filters are becoming popular names for kids.
Okay, so... I don't do Instagram.
Okay.
So let's start with the Instagram filters.
Okay.
What exactly are those?
Well, these, in this case, for boys, Lux, L-U-X, was up 75% since 2014.
As a baby name.
As a baby name.
And that's the name of an Instagram filter.
Correct. The name of an Instagram filter. And then there's Ludwig, which is up 42%, so second most popular.
Is it up to three?
I don't know the exact number, but it's more than that, or so it seems.
And that also is a filter.
That's a filter, correct. And then for girls, there's two popular ones. There's Valencia, which isn't so bad, up 26%, and Juno was up 30%. The thing that shocks me about this is I'm sure there are plenty of people out there that don't know what to name their kids, of course.
Right.
This means that when you're putting a photo into your Instagram, you're probably looking down at your phone, you're seeing this filter name, and you're like, what a great baby name that would be. And the fact that we've reached that point is shocking to me.
Well, okay, so I really don't understand what the filters are. What is a filter?
The filter makes your photo look different.
Oh,
so each one
will do something,
you know, sharpen it or color or whatever the case may
be. And they don't
want
to say gray it out, so they call it Valencia.
Yes, exactly. Like
so yes. So is there any evidence that people are liking the filter and naming their kid after the filter, or they're liking, I'm assuming, the name of the filter?
It really seems to be the name of the filter.
Because don't want their kid to grow up like the Ludwig effect or something like that.
No, because if you look at the ones that are actually popular in terms of usage of the filter, they are things where the names don't make sense, at least for now. They don't make sense. Like Lo-Fi is the most popular one. You don't want your kid named Lo-Fi.
All right, so if you run across a kid named Ludwig at the Christmas party this year, just, you know, give them something extra because it's going to be hard for them.
Yes, exactly.
Well, we're talking about Snapchat, too. They're allowing multiple accounts, which is something new for them.
Yeah, you're going to be able to, well, at least right now on Android, it's a test where you can log into more than one account. And not everybody has more than one Instagram account. Some people do. Like, I administer the Chicago Tribune account and my personal account. But it is a thing now where people actually have more than one Instagram account for different kinds of photos. And it's always been the most annoying thing in the world you have to log in, do your stuff, log out, log in with the other name. Now there's a thing in the menu on Android where you can go and just select the different one and change it over.
What took them so long?
I have no
idea. That seems
idea.
To be a pretty common thing.
It really is. And with the amount of feedback that they have received about that, just the amount of feedback that I have seen, there's no reason in the world why it should have taken this long.
Are you big in on LinkedIn?
I wouldn't say I'm big on it. It's not my favorite platform in the world, but I am on it.
So, you know, I'm on it and I'm just sort of on it, but I'm on it enough to where I get all these people who want to make connections with me.
Sure.
And I'm very lackadaisical about it. So some days I'm thinking, sure. And other days I just, you know, anyway, so I don't use it very well.
Right.
But maybe I should go back to it because they're making it a little more friendly to guys like me.
They're making it more friendly. They're making it look a lot like Facebook. So if you look at the update now and you've used Facebook before, you will definitely recognize this. It has a feed. It's going to show you things that are popular based on what other people are talking about. It's going to get smarter. It says it's going to get smarter over time as it gets to know you. All the things that we heard about Facebook when the news feed came out, it sounds like the same thing for LinkedIn.
It is if you can manipulate it well, right, and operate it correctly.
Well,
a very effective tool.
That's the big thing, yes. And you have to take the time to join groups, select the companies you're interested in, select the types of work that you're interested in, make it so it works for you. Because just like Facebook, if you don't like the correct things, you're going to have this random stuff that you're just like, what is this all? You know, you don't want that.
It's like a virtual job hunt, but it is a real job hunt too, or networking anyway.
It's good networking if you do it right. That's the key point. Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, I've just recently too, because I like to jump on the bandwagon about 4 or 5 years late.
Yeah.
Been introducing myself to Spotify.
Okay, good.
And so, of course, I get it, and it's on my iPhone, and I use it in the health club in the morning where I don't have my reading glasses. So
right.
I know there's so much that I'm not quite taking in there.
Sure.
But it's the big deal now, right? I mean, it's off.
Spotify is huge, yeah.
And so is it worth it to get – I haven't quite sort of rectified the idea of whether it's worth it to – pay for the premium or just use what they give me?
I would say it is really worth the premium because the premium price on Spotify is $10 a month and you get so much stuff for $10 a month. It's one of those things where it feels like any day now they're going to send you a note and say this is $25 because it feels like there's so much stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it's definitely worth it.
What do you get for $10 a month? You can like dial up any album you want.
Everything is unlimited. There's no commercials. There's no, you know, you can fast forward through anything you want. You can download anything there to your iPod if you don't want to actually stream it. You can save it so you're not using your
right.
minutes and stuff. And it's really good.
And 1.8 billion streams so far this year?
1.8 billion streams just for Drake. Drake, the artist, 1.8 billion streams. Oh, I don't even know how many billion it is altogether. It's 1.8 just for him. And then Rihanna had 1 billion herself. So 2.8 right there, 2.8 billion for the year for two stars.
So this would compete with Apple Music?
Absolutely.
Is Apple Music, how's it doing?
Apple Music is doing fine. It's great. There's a lot of stuff. And sometimes there's stuff you can get on Apple Music that you can't get on Spotify, which is great. My biggest complaint, Apple Music is so cluttered, it's difficult to navigate. And it shouldn't be difficult. Spotify is easy.
It's Christmas time. Can you buy a membership for someone?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You can gift memberships and there's gift cards and there's all kinds of ways you can do that.
So if you had to pick a music streaming apparatus to gift someone, would it be Spotify?
It would be Spotify. I have both. I feel weird about giving one up just because, you know, I like Apple. I like the whole, you know, network. Mm-hmm. But I would never give up Spotify. So I say
you have
Spotify.
That weird sort of allegiance to Apple for no particular reason.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I get it.
I have all my life. Yep.
Scott Kleinberg from the Chicago Tribune. We're going to check the traffic and the weather, the news and all that coming up. And then after the break, we're going to sit down, Scott. We're going to turn the lights down a little bit and we're going to color.
Oh, that sounds awesome.
If you want to stick around, we can color together.
I was going to say, that sounds like a lot of fun.
We'll sort of bring our heart rate down and watch the book sales soar. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
Steve Kahn!
Thank you very much, Steve and Kim and Dolly. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks especially to you, Steve. I appreciate your sticking around to say
you're
thank
welcome.
You. Okay, thanks again.
You're welcome.
So check this out. If you go to Amazon.com and look at their top sellers when it comes to books, three of the top 10 are adult coloring books. They've caught on at Barnes & Noble as well. Alex Peruzzi is the vice president of gifts there. He says adult coloring is one of the fastest growing categories that we have. So what's all this about? I know a lot of you out there are colorers, and I don't mind if you color during the business lunch. It's okay. Jennifer Chaika is the manager of programs and exhibits at the Arlington Heights Memorial Library, where they have sort of tapped into a nerve. Jennifer, welcome to the business lunch.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so are you a colorer yourself?
You know, I've picked it up over the last several months as we've started entertaining, bringing it into the library, and I do feel like it's a very, very relaxing activity that isn't replicated by many other activities.
All right, so are you a little surprised by the whole thing?
I'm not surprised by the whole thing. As part of my job, I have to watch what people are interested in, look for trends. And it's not often that you see a trend that's as big as this, that really picks up steam as quickly as this has.
Well, I'm all about libraries. I love libraries, and I love anything that's going to get people into the library. And these coloring groups have sort of done that. You've got an event coming up, I think, on Sunday, right, where people are going to get together, adults are going to get together and color.
We do. We have our second coloring and cocoa event on Sunday. And people really did enjoy the cocoa part of it just as much as the coloring last month.
No one spilled their cocoa on their coloring, did they?
Nobody spilled their cocoa on their coloring.
You have to watch out for that. All right, so explain it for me. What is it that happens at these coloring events?
Well, we're excited that we've been able to bring it into the library, and as have many other neighboring libraries and, you know, nationally. For us, it's just one of many ways that we're trying to make sure that as the needs and roles of libraries are evolving, we're meeting people's needs, we're finding opportunities to provide space for things that they have interest in. So really, for us, this seemed like a very no-risk way to see if people in Arlington Heights were indeed as interested in this activity as people have been nationally.
All right, so you said sold out. So what are we talking about, a couple dozen people, or how many people do you expect on Sunday?
On Sunday, we're expecting 85 people right now, and we have space for 5 more. And that really, we have a very, very large meeting room. We're fortunate to have that, but we also want to keep the groups manageable, make sure there's enough materials for people to use,
right,
and keep the atmosphere social so that people can connect with each other and have some conversations while they're coloring.
Because my experience with colorers, if you have them coloring before their nap time, they can get wild.
Yeah, we'll see. We've done it in the evening before, so the Sunday could bring a whole new coloring crowd.
Yeah, and I don't mean to be silly because it is fascinating to me. I know there was a study out of Knox College in Western Illinois about 10 years ago that said that, you know, it's a very real measurable impact, that it's a stress reducer.
Yeah.
And then one of the things they said was when in the coloring and what people color, it's sort of best if there is... Well, they talked about plaids or a mandala, which is sort of a intricate sort of flower design. But it's interesting to me that there needs to be some sort of structure involved in what people color. Is that what
exactly
you found there?
Yeah, and I mean, that was one of the many studies that, you know, we've seen cited in different articles that have been talking about this. And it seems like that simplified at best, that Knox study, because they really talked about coloring is something that engages both sides of your brain. And in that way, it is different than a lot of other activities. Where you might be able to knit and watch TV, you can't color and watch TV because you're really making choices about what colors you're going to use. And then you're working with the artist's design to make it your own.
Right. So there's, in a way, you're being sort of coddled or cuddled, if you will, by the design, because you can't go wild. So you're operating within a certain confine, which
exactly,
I guess, would reduce the stress a little bit.
Exactly. No, I think that we have seen that is something that makes it attractive to people.
Now, Jennifer, I got to tell you. So I went online last night and started looking at some of these adult coloring designs, and I kind of flipped out a little bit because to me it looked really hard. And then Yun Tai, my producer, I came in and we looked at some together today, and he had the same reaction as I did because – it's, you know, there's a lot of little holes that you've got to color in and that you got to get right.
There's a lot of intricate detail, yes.
So I'm kind of stressed out about thinking about de-stressing.
Well, I reassure you, there are some that are simpler illustrations than others, but it's really interesting to see the concept blow up in the publishing world and to see those choices because, A, it highlights some really interesting illustrators that have been out there doing work, but just not in a way where their work becomes the focus
Sure.
In this sort of way.
Well, I like it. I don't mean to make fun of it. I mean, it's easy to make fun of, so I did a little bit. But I think it's pretty fascinating. You know, it's like I used to like to do jigsaw puzzles, and it's not too much different than that. Maybe, I don't know. There's more creativity involved, I guess.
I think so. I think that it gives you just enough creativity. You don't feel the stress of doing an original illustration or something, you know, hand-drawn.
Right.
You do have those confines. I think, and then you still have a great finished product.
Jennifer Chaika. I'm sorry, Jennifer, the manager of the programs and exhibits at Arlington Heights, and she's got room for five more for this Sunday. Listen, thanks for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Of course. Thank you again.
Bill and Wendy, just around the corner, you're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch.